This is session 3 in the PDH online course, Modern Closed Circuit Television Design. It's our intention to speak about camera enclosures in some detail, a little bit about pan, tilt, zoom mounting, and the very slightest bit about sound, which has actually been covered before, but we'll look at it in a slightly different direction and perhaps in a little more detail. The elements of a closed-circuit TV camera are the lens, lens mount, CCD sensor, electronics, and the signal delivery cable. Again, this is the camera only. The size of the camera, the essential basic electronics of the camera, is about 3 centimeters by 3 centimeters by 3 centimeters. Everything else is added to it, and mostly in the form of the enclosure. Cameras themselves, this is without the enclosure, are available for from $2,500 to $100. The reason they're so expensive is you probably don't want one in this form. It is exceedingly fragile, and it just, I did a job at a hospital research center. There were rats running above the ceiling. Now, these weren't bad rats. These were good rats. They'd escaped from the little cages, and they were living in the above ceiling space. Well, you don't want vermin stepping on your camera. It's not good for the image. It's not good for the aiming. There are other reasons you don't want it exposed. Plumbers go up there to work on leaking pipes. Not good for the camera to have a plumber with a wrench in any nearby location. Sometimes the $25 to $100 includes a swivel bracket for aiming. So the thing is actually ready to go. It's just it's missing the enclosure, which is an essential part of it. In this form, we refer to a television camera as a postage stamp camera. They look a lot like a postage stamp. There are other names in the catalogs. And again, these are readily available. If you want one, you can buy one. There's one pictured in the written version, and I'm going to read you the description because it's important to become familiar with the technical description of the products in order to be able to identify the features you want, the features that aren't important, the features which are being offered that don't match your need. A 1/3 inch high resolution color varifocal dome camera with 4 to 8 millimeter varifocal lens, 550 lines of television resolution, 0.5 lux Panasonic SuperView CCD sensor, power DC 12 volts, $130. Now, this is not the postage stamp camera. This is actually in a mini dome enclosure for $130. It includes a varifocal lens, 4 to 8, so you can see it's not quite a wide angle, but it's mostly a wide angle. 3.6 was the one we've been calling a standard lens. It goes up to 8. 8 is not a telephoto lens. In 35 millimeter talk, it'd be more like what we call a standard lens, where you get two people standing in front of you instead of five people standing in front of you. Better than the postage stamp camera is a metal case with an interchangeable lens mount. In this form, it's called a box camera because you're buying a box on top of the camera. A high impact mini dome or plastic cover, and be a little careful. They're available with polycarbonate covers and acrylic covers. Acrylic covers are good. I'm not disparaging them in any sense. They are less expensive, and fragile isn't the right word because the dome construction is inherently very robust. You can hit an acrylic camera with a bat, an acrylic mini dome with a bat, and it will survive. You can hit a polycarbonate dome with a bat, and it will survive. You can try real hard to hit an acrylic dome with a bat, and you can crack it. You can try real hard to hit a polycarbonate dome with a camera. It will not crack. You may do damage to the electronics, but you will not crack the dome. A thermostatically controlled heater may be enclosed in a box camera, and that is a... I'm sorry, I skipped a step. You can put an external box over top the box camera and include a thermostatically controlled heater. You wouldn't do that over a mini dome camera because it's already got its protection, so you wouldn't put more protection over the protection. If you were to buy an outdoor mini dome camera, you might buy it with a thermostatically controlled heater. Or in a moment, we'll talk about using an outdoor mini dome camera without a thermostatic controlled heater. A weatherproof additional enclosure can be added. The thermostatically controlled heater can be included in the weatherproof enclosure, and a thermostatically controlled fan can be included if there's any way to get the air in without letting the bugs in. The camera does not require environmental controls, but pan, tilt, zoom, and auto iris are mechanical moving parts, require lubrication, and fail later if an environmental enclosure is included. Now, that's a little bit of a silly comment, but there's important meaning there. Again, the electronics of the camera does not require the heater. I've had this discussion with many manufacturers and many designers, and they all say, oh no, they won't work below freezing. Oh yes, they will work below freezing. If you talk to the actual person who designs the camera, there's nothing about the electronics that doesn't work till about minus 30°F. They do work below freezing. There are problems. The cover freezes up. I mean, the ice will form on the dome. Well, you can't see if it's like that, but it's not damaging the camera. Now, the reason I'm making a big deal out of this is you have to run a lot more power out to the enclosure to run a heater. Now, yeah, you'd like to see what's going on when it's freezing. I certainly agree with that. But unless it's freezing more than a few hours a year, you don't put the money in for the heater. Now, let me give you an example of somebody who doesn't put the money in for the heater. A large urban school district in the Snow Belt put in over 1,000 mini-dome cameras without heaters on their outside doors. They're working fine. They're happy with them. They do freeze up occasionally, something like driving sleet or some such thing that melts on it. But it melts away the next day, and it works again. So there is a loss in functionality, but there's a substantial savings in the mechanical components of the thermostat, the wiring for the heater. The heater will take 10 times as much power as the camera. I'm not speaking on the subject of the power requirements for the heater. The cameras are very, very economical. 10 volt amperes, a tenth of an ampere. And you talk about 25 watts or 50 watts or 250 watts for some of these heaters. Again, it is very important for mechanical lubricated devices that have to slide back and forth. The lubricants, even when carefully chosen, thicken up in the cold, and it's hard on the camera to survive. If there are no moving components, the heater becomes superfluous. Pan, tilt, zoom, and auto iris are mechanical moving parts and fail later if in an environmental enclosure. They last a little longer. Box camera is shown. This is an 80-foot infrared day-night color, high-resolution box camera for $209. According to the description from the manufacturer, this camera has the highest resolution possible. Let's see if they say someplace what the resolution is. That's great. They don't tell you the resolution, and they say it's the highest resolution possible. There are problems with marketing statements. Highest resolution possible would be about 600 lines, but I doubt it would be 600 lines in color. Anyway, they won't tell you what it is, so we have to speculate what it is. Back to their description. This camera has the highest resolution possible and a 0.05 lux Sony imaging chip. You have the best camera on the market with 4 infrared high-output LEDs mounted on the front. It sees an incredible 80 feet with no light. Excellent choice for a DVR. And let me read the rest of the description here. Notes. The lens is selected separately. You spend your $209 and it doesn't work. You have to spend another, I will say $10 because the wholesale price on fixed lens is $10. You can get them on the internet for $10, but you might spend $50 if you buy it at your local camera store. Let's see, camera store, electronics store, security store. So the lens is selected separately. The infrared LEDs will reach 80 feet. However, you need to choose the best lens for the distance and angle of view that you desire. We call this field of view. If you want to use this camera outdoors, you need to put it in an outdoor housing. Yes, we said that too. Keep in mind that housings are not small. They are over a foot long. They look fine in an industrial or business application, but some homeowners do not care for the look of a large housing on their home exterior. When putting an infrared camera in a housing, be sure to put the camera lens flush to the glass of the housing. This will reduce any glare from the infrared LEDs. Now, this brings up a couple of problems. Obviously, they're talking about the lens is next to the LED. I'm sorry, the lens is next to the outdoor window, but the LEDs are behind it. So the LEDs are bouncing, the infrared is bouncing around inside the box, not even getting out. When they say 80 feet, and from the picture there are only four of these LEDs, I am extremely suspicious. Bullet cameras, we'll talk about later, come in an outdoor housing with a circle of infrared LEDs around the lens. And they'll have 12, 15, 18 LEDs, and they talk about 10 feet or 30 feet pickup. So this 80 feet may be from the same marketing guy that decided high resolution was better than a number. Features: Sony 1/3 inch Super HAD X-View CCD sensor. Built-in light sensor shuts off during the day. It took me a long time to figure out what they were talking about. I think they turn off the infrared LEDs during the day. 480 lines. I'm sorry, I didn't read carefully. That is high resolution in this context. 0.0 lux at f1.2 up to 80 feet. Now, we've been talking about f1.4 as being a premium lens, a standard lens. f1.2 is one notch better, but you'll never be able to tell the difference. If this thing requires an f1.2, you put an f1.4, it'll be a good day. Auto iris control. Video drive lens and DC drive lens supported. C and CS mount adjustable. C is the old television standard. 8mm film was about the same size as these sensors, and C-mount lenses put an image about the right size for a 1/3 inch CCD. So when it started out, they just took over 8mm technology and used C-mount lenses. CS lenses are a little smaller because actually the sensor is a little smaller than the 8mm. You can buy an adapter, so if a camera comes with a C-mount lens, you can use a CS adapter and use the slightly smaller lens on it. And apparently this camera is supplied with that little adapter. Auto gain control, 12 volts DC. A box camera can be placed in a large weatherproof dome, often pendant mounted from the building or from an existing light pole or from a new light pole. Environmentally controlled pendant large domes are available for about $1,000. A simple dome from the predominant manufacturer costs about $500. Low-cost imports cost about $125, except they're out of stock. Imported weatherproof mini domes, now this is the mini dome without the postage stamp camera, $5 to $50. Now you can see what's going on here. It's much easier to fabricate a small item than a large item. It takes a big production line with big equipment to do the big domes, and they're expensive, and only the big guys do them. It's very easy to make a mini dome enclosure, and there's a lot of competition. People put up the domes with no cameras in them, and with the smoked glass, it's an excellent deterrent. Not quite as good as recording the bad guy doing the bad things, but keeping bad guys from trying it, it works many times. Especially it keeps good guys who get a bad idea from doing it. A top end pan, tilt, zoom, auto iris, environmentally controlled large dome system lists for $2,500, and it's discounted only a few hundred dollars on the internet. After the mechanicals lock up from normal wear, this is an expected failure mode, the camera may still work only in the last position with the last zoom setting. And by the way, one of the jobs I'm working on, that is the condition of five mini domes installed there. The cameras still work. There's nothing wrong with the video cable. There's nothing wrong with the power supply cable. They're still getting a picture from it. But it's the last picture it was focused on before the mechanicals locked up. A sizable maintenance cost is confronted from the failure. And they just left them like that. Five expensive mini domes looking at a place on the ground where somebody was walking last time they used it, in addition to renting the man lift to work on it. Once again, the whole point of these pan-tilt zoom is to get them up in the air so that you've got a wide view. Getting them up in the air requires a machine to get the guy up in the air to work on it. Man lift is expensive to rent. Now, is $100 expensive? Well, if you don't have $100 in your maintenance budget, and the idea is you're going to take the guy up there and find out what's wrong with it and take him up again to fix it, it starts getting expensive. A sizable maintenance cost is confronted in addition to renting the man lift to work on it. The following alternative is offered for your consideration. A quad multiplexer produces a single four-way split screen image over a single video cable. The quad has an image resolution of 525 by 600 and delivers four images of 262 by 300. Note that essentially no horizontal resolution is lost. On a large screen, you get four pretty good pictures. Now, the graphic from the text you're not getting shows a cross-section of a pan-tilt-zoom camera. It's got a 15-inch dome with a housing above it that's mounted someplace. The housing has power coming into it, control coming into it, video going out of it. The bottom of it is a hemispherical dome, again, polycarbonate, if you're going first class, and I think at $1,000 a shot, they're all first class. It could be acrylic otherwise. Smoked or clear. Some people get a big kick out of putting in a clear dome on the thing so the bad guys can see they're being watched. Again, after the thing locks up and won't move, it's better to have a smoke dome on it. The alternative to this, on the right-hand side, it's to use the existing enclosure, which is a very expensive enclosure. Take out the pan, tilt, zoom, and box camera. Put in a little metal bracket, which you can make up yourself or your contractor can make up, with a quad multiplexer and four cameras. Now, we're showing four postage stamp cameras in the illustration. Two of them are wide angle, the 3.6 standard unit, and two of them are telephoto, which are 5 to 50 millimeter varifocals that, again, you can buy off the shelf as standard units. You put them into this enclosure, and the two wide angles give you a phenomenal view of everything that's out there. I mean, 180-degree view. Everything on one side of the fence shows up very clearly. The telephotos can be focused on what you're interested in. If somebody broke out and climbed the fence that place, that's the place you focus one of your telephotos. Yeah, you don't use it 364 days of the year, but when somebody's climbing a fence right there, that's a good place to have a camera focused. And probably the other one is focused at the front door of your building to see who's out there rattling on the door, whether they look especially agitated. And by the way, this is materials only. You still have to rent the high lift to get a guy up there to work on it. And you have to pay for the guy to do the work all along as well. I worry sometimes if this fabricated bracket is a big deal, but light gauge strip steel or any aluminum can be hand-bent to the shape you want. So the trick is to bend it into kind of a horseshoe shape so that you can mount it on the existing tabs that mounted the pan-tilt zoom, and then bend the rest of it so that you can mount the postage stamps. Remember, the postage stamps have their own tilt and pan adjustments on them. So after you mount the cameras, then you can wiggle the cameras around till you get a picture you like. One way to do this would be to use a radio and a person at the other end paying attention to the screen. Of course, you have to pay for two people to do this. The other way is to take a small monitor up on the man lift with you. These things run off 12 volts DC. I mean, if you don't have 12 volts DC on your man lift, get one of these car starter battery things and run the little monitor off that and do all your aiming while the guy is up on the lift the first time. He doesn't even have to come down if he has the right size screws to install the thing. If you have a lot of confidence in your calculation skills, you can calculate which way the camera should be pointed, mount the thing, and then just tweak it a little bit to get exactly what you were looking for. The mini large dome above is based upon Mini large dome, that's the one with the replacement mini small cameras, is based upon use of postage stamp cameras available with telephoto varifocal lens. Domes of 9 inches and 15 inches can easily accept box cameras with longer lenses, like a 7-70 or even a 125 millimeter fixed. Four 3.6 millimeter postage stamp cameras provide 360 degree coverage. more than four cameras cannot be handled by a quad multiplexer. I mean, that's why it's a quad. It puts four down the line and probably justify multiple cables or a six-camera IPTV server. Now, that's something we're going to get into later. The IPTV server puts its output down a twisted pair line. So if the video is shorted for whatever reason, you can use one of the control leads you're abandoning, I'm sorry, two of the control leads, to pump your signal back to the control room. Full screen images are available from multiple cameras on the IPTV servers. Postage stamp cameras can be manufactured in tiny tubular weatherproof enclosures. They're called bullet cameras in this application. Now be careful if you're looking at the catalog. There's indoor bullet cameras and outdoor bullet cameras. Indoor bullet cameras are used for covert surveillance. We're not doing that. They're little. I mean, they are so little, they're the size of your thumb. And the intention is to hide them someplace. Well, we're not doing that. We're getting the Husky ones with the metal case on them. And any fixed lens you want, including a varifocal lens. As we were saying, outdoor bullet cameras with the weatherproof enclosure, which adds to the price substantially. Yeah, they're up to $89 then. Low-end units cost slightly more than $50. Varifocal lens units are available from $350 to $500. Why the big jump for changing the lens? Because there's adjustments on a varifocal lens. We didn't go into this before, but maybe it's time to do so now. A wide-angle lens inherently has a very large depth of view. Now, what's going on here? Field of view is the width of the picture. A wide-angle lens has a very wide field of view. Along with the optics that make this work, you inherently get a large depth of view. That is, if the thing is focused on the cash register, it's behind the cashier, it's focused on the cash register, it will pick up the people standing in front of the cash register, it'll pick up the rack of Fritos behind that, and it will pick up the cooler at the back of the store, and all of this will be in focus. That's because wide angle inherently has a large depth of view. There's no adjustment for focus because the focus is to infinity. I mean, it just has a large depth of view. Again, usually on these little lenses, you have no iris control, no aperture control. It's wide open. I mean, it's used inside in a store. If you need aperture control, you may have an electronic shutter, so there's nothing to adjust on. A very simple, very robust, I mean, flexible, it is a wide-angle lens, but after that, there's nothing to fool with it. On a varifocal, typically, I'm remembering you have three adjustments. Let me see if I can figure out what the three adjustments are. One is the zoom, and wrong word, I apologize. One is the telephoto to wide angle. Zoom is a different word, and it means something entirely different. Do not confuse varifocal with zoom. A varifocal lens will focus as wide angle, focus as standard, focus as telephoto, and there has to be an adjustment for it. The cameras I'm used to have a little lever that moves around the perimeter. Fancy 35mm cameras have a ring that goes around the perimeter that you grab possibly while you're taking the picture. But this chooses whether it's wide angle or telephoto. So when you're setting it up, you have to turn this lever or ring to get the picture you want. Well, how do you do that in a weatherproof enclosure? The goal is to avoid having a crack for the snow to drip in, melt and drip into, for the bugs to crawl in and lay their eggs. I mean, you don't want any opening in a weatherproof enclosure. One manufacturer has a real slick solution to this. They're magnetically operated. So outside is the lever that goes around, inside is the ring that turns, and they're coupled by magnetism through a non-magnetic case, a little plastic case, and if it's thin enough, run the magnetism through it, you move on the outside, it moves on the inside, everything's slick. But a real slick thing like that costs hundreds of dollars. Other people have complex labyrinth enclosures where the crack is small and then there's another small crack and a third small crack and no bug is supposed to be smart enough to crawl through there. They don't know the bugs around here. And again, you've got the field of view adjustment. Now, I made the point a moment ago, a zoom is different from a varifocal. Two differences between a zoom and a varifocal. Zoom is very expensive. Varifocal is very moderate in cost. Aha! Why is one expensive and why is the other less expensive? Because a zoom stays in focus from wide angle to telephoto. All you do is adjust the zoom control, not the field of view control, and you get the picture you want. You never have to touch the focus. Varifocal, on the other hand, is much less expensive. Each time you change the field of view, you must change the focus. That's why it's called varifocal. It is a 3.6 millimeter lens, it's a 5 millimeter lens, it's an 8 millimeter lens. Each of those focal lengths require a focus adjustment. And for this reason, it's inexpensive, on the order of $100, less than $100. If you want to spend more than $100, you're paying a lot of markup to your distributor, or you're buying a long telephoto, like a 125 millimeter varifocal, will be over $100, might be over $200. They don't sell many of them, so there's not much competition, and so it's not a low-cost item. Zoom lens starts at hundreds of dollars and goes up from there. The reason being, it's much more complicated internally. And it's kind of fun to look at if you get a chance. If you're ever able to hold a zoom lens in your hand or turn around a camera with a zoom lens so you can look down the barrel of the thing, when you change the zoom control, there are two lenses. Two lenses internally in addition to the external lens. The one internal lens moves away from the external lens. The other internal lens moves towards the internal lens. The net effect is it adjusts the field of view and holds the focus. But you can see it's complicated, and there's a lot of mechanical linkage in there to make this thing work. That's why in the earlier discussion we were saying that thing has to be lubricated and it has to hold up, and it's going to die if it's in an abusive environment. So let us continue here. Postage stamp cameras can be manufactured in a tiny tubular weatherproof enclosure. That's what we were talking about. Low-end units cost slightly more than $50. Varifocal lens units, not zoom units, varifocal lens units, are available for $350 to $500. One that I get a real big kick out of is advertised as a license plate camera for gas stations. So it is set up for the region where the car stops, the license plate area when a car stops. And if somebody starts driving off without paying for it, you click the button and you get printed picture of it. And you don't have to click the button. You can leave your time-lapse recorder on. You sit there for 5 minutes pumping gas. It's even with a slow frame rate, you're going to get several pictures of that license plate. And again, if you have one of these at each of your pumps, you know which pump had the no pay, you know which pump to look at, and follow through on it. In the written version of this, we have color low light cylinder camera, bullet camera with varifocal lens, and there's a full description of this. There is nothing essentially different from this, from the ones we've looked at either earlier, but it mentions the Lens DC Auto Iris varifocal lens 5 to 50 millimeter and electronic shutter 1/60th to 1/100th of a second. Operating temperature minus 14 degrees F to plus 122 degrees F. So, let's see if it says the resolution. Yes, 480 lines. On another topic, some CCTV cameras are available with a built-in microphone. Three questions arise immediately. Should you use it? How to use it? And is it legal? Now, to me, legal is most important because I hate to spend money to buy problems. It just goes against everything in my nature to make things worse because of my project. You should have legal counsel available. Almost every firm in the United States has a lawyer on retainer. Before you record sound, before you monitor sound, please check on the legality of it and convince yourself you're not setting your firm up for a lawsuit. Now, one vendor had a real interesting statement, which I will share with you. I am not endorsing this statement, but I'm sharing it with you for your consideration. He said, if you put up a sign with 1-inch letters on it, conversations may be monitored and recorded. You have no legal liability. And without being a lawyer, this sounds reasonable to me. One of the reasons you can get away with recording video without saying anything is because everybody can see the camera. It's not a concealed camera. We're not talking about situations with concealed cameras. It's out in the open, and everybody knows they're being recorded. the microphone, you don't know which hole on the equipment has a microphone behind it. So a microphone is inherently a covert operation. And people view it as an invasion of privacy to have audio recording. Now, the real reason this is illegal is because we've had telephone a lot longer than we've had television. And early on, the courts decided that the rules were required to record telephone conversations. Microphones come under the wiretap rules. And again, I'm sounding like a lawyer. I don't intend to sound like a lawyer. Talk to your own lawyer and get some good advice on this. Let me share an aside with you, and maybe it doesn't belong here. I apologize if you're offended, but my wife bought a car this week. And one of the forms we signed when we're buying the car is that it's okay to record this conversation. And we said, what? What? And she points, the lady who was filling out the paperwork, points at a motion detector. It's one of those things, in a little plastic box with a little white window on it. And instead of the red light at the bottom, it had a tiny hole with a pinhole camera behind it. And she points up to that and she says, that's the camera. Then she points to the box beside her desk that looks like a thermostat. And she says, that's the microphone. So their way to get around any liability associated with recording is to have you sign away your rights. So, I mean, there are ways to address the legalities of this, and that's what their lawyer told them they should do, and people were signing 20 forms at the time, and she didn't mind telling us what it was, and honestly, we didn't mind signing it. I mean, we weren't doing anything we wanted to hide, and it might be valuable to record what they were doing at that time. Should you monitor audio? The recommendation from this course is no. There's a substantial sense of invasion of privacy associated with audio recording. It is not attached to video recording because the camera is visible. The goal of maintaining goodwill of criminals in the act or trespassers is not a priority, and the recommendation against audio recording is not in those cases. Maintaining the goodwill of employees, customers, guests, and accused felons may be critical. Now, I tried to choose the words carefully, and I hope you'll share this with me. Maintaining the goodwill of your employees is critical. That's the way I think you should run a business. You should work together to satisfy the customer. You should work together to make a decent profit. You should be friends, and the people I work for insist you're supposed to have a little bit of fun. You should maintain the goodwill of customers. A lot of things I read say it costs 10 times as much to get a new customer as to keep an old customer. So be very careful before you burn an existing customer. Again, I think every motel I've been in the last 10 years has a camera watching the clerk and the guests. I don't feel bad about that. To me, that's for my protection as well as their protection. I don't want them recording if I make a silly joke so that a cop comes to visit me the next morning at 9 o'clock. What did you mean by what you said last night? The audio recording bothers me as a guest, and it may bother other people as guests. When I say you don't want to offend accused felons are innocent until they're proven guilty. Some fraction of them are going to get off. And if they're real irritated, they're going to come back at you. And are you gaining something by recording accused felons and undertaking the legal hassle of explaining to a judge why you did it and how you had a sign next to the door? And I hope that sign was still intact when this happened. Your decision, my recommendation. How to monitor audio is easy, but may be costly. Inexpensive standard intercom master stations, which handle remote speakers, may work without modification. You just hook up the microphone in the camera to the intercom master, and you've got monitoring. If that doesn't work, you can put a little speaker next to it, and you've got a full intercom. There's no massive undertaking necessary. You've put an intercom at the door. When somebody pushes the button to talk to you on the intercom, you hear them, and if you choose, you can record them. And the cost of this audio is less than $100. So if you're looking for audio on the camera, it's fairly easy to do in single camera situations. Once you get 8 or 16 cameras, what are you going to do? And you can have a big display with 16 little switches so you can switch on the one you want. This is very viable, works fine. The cost starts going towards $500, but it works. If you want to go first class on this, and in some cases you have no choice, you must go first class, you can automatically choose a camera with your video switcher, automatically hook up the intercom to that location. In order to do this, you need a remote control audio amplifier. This is something that you just buy from an audio amplifier guy, not a hi-fi audio amplifier guy, an intercom audio amplifier guy. The ones I've looked at were about $1,000. They are very sophisticated devices. You think about them in terms of a switch that changes it. They all come with data connections so that the computer that's choosing your camera sends a computer data word to the audio amplifier to choose the audio source that comes out your speaker. As you can see, being software and computerized, they're very, very, very flexible. Unfortunately, since they only sell a few of these, they're also very, very expensive. But it works, and it's available. And if you need it, $1,000 isn't a big cost for it. Some IPTV cameras are supplied with microphones and proprietary sound transmission schemes. Some have outboard sound adapters available. Color cameras work well, but revert to black and white in low-light situations. Black and white cameras work very well, but do not convey color information. Cost is very nearly the same, and that's a surprise to most people. Obviously, color is better than black and white. No, color is not necessarily better than black and white, and they sell an awful, awful lot of color cameras. Plus, they sell an awful, awful lot of black and white cameras. The difference in the electronics between color and black and white in cameras is very, very slight. If you're talking about an application-specific integrated circuit, one application-specific integrated circuit is about the same cost as another. One of them may have more cells on it, more functioning, but again, after you do 10,000 of the units, it doesn't show up in the cost. And let's spend a moment discussing why black and white may actually be better than color. Well, or first, let's talk about why the color may be more valuable than a better picture. Color information may be very valuable. Identifying individual high school students, this is something I have experience with, even in a group, is done by the clothing, not by the facial features. Identification of cars in a parking lot, in transit, or at a traffic control signal are identified by color, not by the license plates. On the other hand, wildlife that normally trip motion alarms on cameras covering an open area show up as well without color, and in fact, alarming on an intruder works just as well without color. Black and white can easily deliver 525 by 600 without stretching the specification. At one time, higher resolution was available in black and white than in color, while staying in a limited price range. Today, the specifications are very similar, probably favoring color, since more research and production development are done on color units. But there's still an inherent thing that black and white gives you more detail than color. And the way you answer that question is how many lines are promised by the manufacturer. If he promises 600 lines, the other guy's promising 300 lines, you're getting a lot more picture in the 600 lines. Now, if you're interested in detail, that's what you're looking for. Again, color has just a tremendous value to the human eye because everything we do is trained in terms of color. Again, back to the kids in the high schools, the kids wear their favorite shirt. The kid in the fluorescent pink shirt is the kid in the fluorescent pink shirt, and there may not be many of them around. Also in high school, kids develop a peculiar gait in the way they walk and swing their arms. Again, you pick that up very easily from the camera, even though you can't pick out facial features. There's a perception that low-cost black and white cameras do not last as long as high-end pan-tilt zoom cameras. This is mostly passed around by the people who sell high-end pan-tilt zoom cameras. Unfortunately, it's an outright error. What happens on low-cost cameras is, if they don't work when you take them out of the box, they don't work, and you have to get a warranty replacement. If they do work when you take them out of the box, typically they work a long, long time, a number of years. Statistics from a large urban school district in the Snow Belt, which installed several thousand outdoor mini-dome black and white cameras without heaters, has experienced very, very low failure rates. On the other hand, some pan-tilt zoom units have required service within 2 years. And remember, required service means it doesn't work anymore. It's staring at a place on the ground and nowhere else in your field. Pan-tilt zoom cameras are modifications to the enclosure and lens. These will be discussed individually. Automatic controls will be addressed in a later section. Pan refers to horizontal motion of the camera. The camera is always mounted in a horizontal plane, usually matching the Earth's horizontal plane. Therefore, pan motion produces a rotation around the axis of the base. Now, this sounds like heavy-duty engineering again, but it leads to something that's important to you. If the tilt is zero, exactly horizontal mounting, then the image moves horizontally, but only if the direction is exactly horizontal. If you've got the thing up in a pendant mount on a pole, you know, 40 feet in the air, you have to point it down to see what you're looking at. If it's pointed down and starts moving around this Earth's horizontal axis, what you're doing is you're creating a cone on the ground. Now, if you get this in your mind well, it's not a problem, but it's not intuitive. You think when you're looking at the horizontal, you look around, you see around. Yeah, but when you look down, when you look around, you don't look in a straight line. You look in a circle around the axis that you're moving. Now, what that means is if somebody is walking across the parking lot you're looking at, you have to keep adjusting the pan tilt zoom to follow them. The natural motion of the pan is to go in this circular pattern. People don't walk in circles. It's almost a signal that they need medical attention if people start walking in circles. People walk in straight lines. They see where they want to go, and they go that way, and they jog around what's in between. But mostly, they go in a straight line. The horizontal panning motion does not go in a straight line in most applications. Therefore, if you're going to use pan tilt zoom, you're going to sit there and play with the joystick to follow the person across the lot. Now, the other alternative is to back off so it's wide angle and you can watch him move and you don't have to do any adjustment. He goes from the lower left-hand corner to the upper right-hand corner and you're happy, you're watching him, you're seeing if he's smashing any car headlights as he walks along, if he's keying any of the doors. But when you zoom out on a pan-tilt zoom, you're not getting much benefit of the pan-tilt zoom function you just bought, and you might be better off with a fixed wide angle that's going to last a lot longer. Again, that's the author's message, author's message. Regardless of practical limitations, pan means horizontal motion. Tilt refers to vertical motion of the camera about a fixed horizontal axis. Raising the camera while keeping a fixed orientation might also be called vertical motion, but that's not tilt. The problems with tilt are the sky and the sun. Objects seen against asphalt, concrete, or grass have a reasonable contrast ratio. Once again, this will show up in what we're interested in, the image. It is not technical jargon thrown out for the joy of technical jargon. Objects seen against asphalt, concrete, or grass have a reasonable contrast ratio. The image looks good. Objects seen against the sky have a contrast ratio beyond that which can be reproduced by the camera or monitor. When the problem shows up in still photography, it's called backlighting, and white balance is adjusted to the point that the entire contrast ratio is used in the foreground object, and the background blooms out. You get no background detail. Automatic controls on a CCTV camera will do this. If successful, you will see a momentary bloom as it adjusts. If not successful, you will see a blurry shadow against a nice image of the clouds and contrails. If the installation permits panning above or tilting above true horizontal, the image of the sun will be on the CCD. The image of the sun will be on the CCD sensor one day of the year, guaranteed. No more images will form on that part of the CCD ever again. Depending on the electronics, the camera may be self-protected so that it never reports an image ever again. The sun will destroy cameras. If you think this through, this is the same thing as chasing an ant down the steps. The focus point of a lens is very, very high temperature. No electronics is going to survive that, even from the little itty-bitty lenses we're buying for closed-circuit TV. For a fixed camera, that's no problem. You point it below horizontal, horizontal meaning the horizon. You never get the sun. You're never going to get that problem. You may get a reflection off a car windshield, but this is much, much less severe than staring directly at the sun and holding it while the sun goes up and down. Zoom is a complicated, expensive, and guaranteed to fail. It's not very useful, but boy, is it fun to ride the joystick. For remote control zoom to work, you must communicate a zoom in command, a neutral condition, and a zoom out command. This requires three wires from the control point to the camera location. A common workaround is to multiplex the zoom and the pan and the tilt on the video cable, called down the coax. Multiplexers and demultiplexers are expensive, and there's no reason to believe that part of the baseband, the 0 to 6 MHz used by video, where the control signals are hidden, will not be filtered out by control devices from a different vendor. With digital processing becoming almost universal, special efforts must be made by the manufacturer to pass the unused portions of the signal. These unused portions are the ones that you're hiding your control signal in. The result is a system of pan, tilt, zoom control over the coax that works, but limits you to a single vendor or trust in advertising claims of alternate vendors. A complicated lens motion linkage, an electric motor, introduce a number of temperature-sensitive, limited-life components. The environmental controlled enclosure is recommended to delay the guaranteed failure. As the components are internal to the zoom lens, you get to buy a new zoom lens after you rent the man lift. The flexible wiring or slip rings between the demultiplexer and the zoom drive have a reputation of failing as well. Real-world surveillance is not like entertainment drama programs. In fiction, the operator looks up and sees a full headshot of the perpetrator standing still, looking into the camera, or wiping a knife on his pants. In the real world, the camera automatically pans, and the operator must be watching at exactly the right moment to see something out of the ordinary. With motion sensing, a fixed camera or pan-tilt-zoom camera at a fixed setting, alarms, that is, motion sensing, causing alarming when somebody moves into the region where the motion sensing is set up. So the operator is told to look up. Advanced systems may be programmed to zoom into the motion sense target point to get a good look at the raccoon, which has crossed the perimeter. Operators almost universally request that motion sensing be disabled. Another alternative is linked alarms. A microwave emitter detector or personal infrared alarm senses an alarm. The operator looks up to see the raccoon, or an automatic device zooms into the location where the raccoon has operated the sensor. The reason I make this dumb joke is because there's a lot of raccoons out there, and there are only a few bad guys that are trying to get in late at night. So just by statistics, you're much more likely to get a picture of the raccoon than a picture of the bad guy. Now, does that mean don't spend money on it? No, it means anticipate the problem. The operator is not going to like that unless it is sensitive to bad guys and insensitive to raccoons. And by the way, for persons in other portions of the country, you can substitute armadillo for raccoon if you wish. Previously, recessed ceiling enclosures and corner enclosures were popular. Now, wait a minute, what are we talking about here? 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, they sold these massive steel things that bolted onto the ceiling or bolted into the corner. I pass a garage each day when I walk into work, and I look at the CCTV camera. And it's a big thing. It's about 18 inches across. It is mounted into the corner where the cars drive out, up in the ceiling. And it's got some bulletproof glass in front of it. And it's smoked glass, so you have to look real hard to see the camera behind it. And they've got a box camera behind it. And it works fine. But it's big and massive and expensive. These things are still available, and in the written form of the course, I've got advertisements for them. I mean, you can see them. But again, with the postage stamp camera, this is such massive overkill that the only reason you would even consider it is if you're retrofitting into an existing enclosure with existing wiring and you put your postage stamp camera behind it. And if you want to put a box camera behind it, you can. You've got plenty of room for a box camera. I've got some pictures in the written form of some recessed ceiling housings that fit into a 2x2 grid for a lay-in ceiling. And these are fairly expensive, but they're nice and they work. Here's a high-security corner mount indoor camera housing. Housing only, no camera, $249.95. This is correctional duty. This is for use in prisons, where people are sure to swing the chair at it because they have trouble finding bats. Here's an outdoor small enclosure for $115. This is from a major manufacturer. The descriptive features are low cost, small contemporary design, die cast extruded aluminum construction, forward opening hinge lid, fiber link lock latch. I don't know what that means. Cable entry guards and mounting holes in bottom of enclosure. Designed for indoor-outdoor applications. Easy access for servicing and installation. Models available with factory-installed low-power heater, blower, and diffuser. With heater and defrost. Maybe that was defroster. And again, this is $115 for the enclosure alone. Here is a mini enclosure for indoor or outdoor mounting. Oh, this one also has the camera in it. That's the $2,500 one we've referenced to periodically. Again, if this stuff is interesting to you, all you have to do is go on the internet and say pan, tilt, zoom, CCTV, mini dome camera, and you'll come back with hundreds, maybe thousands of hits. The first ones will be the people who pay for the advertisements. Those are the people who are using your money to pay for advertising. They're also using your money for research and development. They're using your money for training materials for the guy who installs it. They're using your money for white papers so you can go to their websites and find out how the technology works. I am not speaking against the expensive high-end devices. I'm only saying buy what you need, buy it intelligently. There are a lot of times when a turnkey installation where you pay the premium cost, you've got a guy who knows what he's doing, a guy who's willing to come back and fix it when you need it, is a very wise investment. We're going to talk about video controls, but let's hold that off for the next session. We've finished what we know about enclosures. We've talked a little bit about pan, tilt, zoom, and a little bit about sound. So video controls, meaning things like sequential switchers and quads, and just barely start on the digital videotape recorders in our next session.